The X Zone radio and TV show is largely an opinion talk show. All opinions, comments, or statements of fact expressed by Rob McConnell's guests are strictly their own and are not to be construed as those of the X Zone radio and TV show or in any manner endorsed by Rob McConnell, Relmar McConnell Media Company, Talkstar Radio Network, its affiliated stations, or employees.
Welcome to the X Zone, a place where fact is fiction and fiction is reality. Now, here's your host, Rob McConnell.
Welcome back to the X Zone, everyone. My name is Rob McConnell, and we're coming to you live and around the world on the Talkstar Radio Network and our fine broadcast to affiliates across Canada, the United States, Central America, the Caribbean, South America, the Pacific Rim, Asia, and Europe. Our toll-free number is 1-877-528-8255. Now, that is toll-free throughout the U.S., Canada, Alaska, and Hawaii. Our email address is xzone@talkstarradio.com. On MSN Messenger, talkstarradio@hotmail.com. And our website, www.xzoneradio.com. My guest this hour is Reverend Daniel Gargiulo. We're going to be talking about occult investigations. Reverend Daniel is a practitioner of esoteric Christianity, holds ordination in several religious organizations, and has lectured on metaphysics at the university level. He resides in Baltimore, Maryland, where his lifelong research continues into the realms of exorcism, demonology, and psychic phenomena. And Daniel, Reverend Daniel, welcome to the show.
Good evening, sir.
How are you tonight, sir?
I'm well.
Reverend, I was wondering if you could please explain to us how you became an ordained minister or ordained priest.
Well, it happened through a series of rather unusual circumstances for such a thing, I would say. In the early 1990s, I became associated with a metaphysical bookstore in Allentown, Pennsylvania, called Cosmic Visions Limited, which was run by a gentleman named Jay Solomon, who was very well known in the metaphysical field at that time. And through his bookstore and other activities that he had in the area, I became acquainted with another gentleman named Bishop Jason Fox, who was what is termed an Episcopi Vagante, or wandering bishop. He had been ordained as a minister originally as a priest and then bishop in the Byzantine Catholic Church, but had left to go on his own while maintaining his ordination, the sacramental powers of ordination, because according to Catholic doctrine, a priest always retains the sacramental powers, and a bishop can ordain others into the priesthood. And through Bishop Fox, who recognized what he termed abilities in me of spiritual discernment and so forth, invited me into the priesthood and the apostolic lineage, the Byzantine apostolic lineage.
Now, what is the origin of your ordained name, Gargiulo or Gargiulo?
Gargiulo. Gargiulo is based on the word gargoyle, which is the unusual-looking stone creatures often seen on the Gothic cathedral, who are believed to be actual guardians against evil. The idea originally comes from a legendary story in the life of St. Romanus, who was the bishop of Rouen, France, during the 7th century, who, according to the story, delivered the town from a gigantic creature, a sort of dragon called La Gougille, meaning the gurgler, because it spewed scalding water out of its mouth and through prayer and the rites of exorcism, Saint then Bishop Romanus was able to deliver the town and bring the creature under control, where it became a guardian against evil, and all of the gargoyle statues are based on that, basically.
So basically, you are a protector of religion.
In a sense, that's one of the things that I tend to do. Religion, true religion, not necessarily everything that you see portrayed as organized religion in the modern world would meet with everything in my approval, but I do believe that religion is a good thing, a necessary thing, and basically does good for the human race.
Reverend Daniel Gargiulo is our special guest, and we will be back on the other side of this two-minute break. If you'd like to visit Reverend Daniel Gargiulo's website, it's www.gargiulo.com. That's GARGUILLIO.com. And we'll be back on the other side talking about occult investigations, demonology, psychic phenomenon, and exorcism when we return here to the X-Zone on Talkstar. Reverend Daniel Gargiulo is our special guest. His website is www.gargiulo.com. And Reverend Daniel, what is esoteric Christianity?
Esoteric Christianity is a belief that there is more to Christian doctrine, and especially to the Holy Scriptures and the interpretation of the Holy Scriptures, than is usually portrayed to the public by organized religion, basically, is one way of stating it.
Mm-hmm.
The ancient belief of Gnosticism was one sort of esoteric Christianity, but by far not the only one.
How different is real religion from the religion that we know?
Real religion is concerned with the betterment of humanity, quite simply, is not based around far too much of what you see in organized religion these days. Ministers and priests of organized religion more interested in, of course, money-making and getting involved in politics for their own reasons rather than for the betterment of humanity. That's how I would express that. Plus, I would say religion is a bit more esoteric Christianity. Anyway, in a religious context, is more intellectually based than the more external forms of religion, which are more emotionally based.
What is one great mystery of biblical interpretation you could reveal and share with us?
One of my personal favorites is in the Gospel according to St. John, the first chapter, the fifth verse. It says, "The light shines in darkness, and the darkness did not comprehend it." In the Latin, it's lucere in tenebris lucet, et tenebris non comprehendis. And the interesting thing there is the mix of present and past tense. The light shines in darkness, present tense, and the darkness did not comprehend it, past tense.
Mm-hmm.
And that reveals the mystery that light, things of God, things of goodness, exist outside of the time-space continuum, while darkness, the things of evil, the evil spirits, are bound up in matter, in time and space. That's one of the mysteries that I can reveal, which is a favorite of mine.
Do you think that we are in the apocalyptic end times as depicted in the book of Revelations?
In one sense, we have to remember that the end times began with the coming of the Messiah, which was in Christian belief, of course, was 2,000 years ago with Jesus Christ. But beyond that, I would say we are moving into that era, I do believe, personally, that the signs are there.
Does your belief in the apocalypse differ than the belief by so many others in organized religion that it is going to be the end of the world?
I have some definite differences in belief from what they think. I don't think that it's going to be a great tragedy in the end. Good will triumph, of course, and the forces of darkness will be destroyed. The sad thing is what's going to happen in the meantime, when many people, even well-meaning, good Christian and other good religious people, good Jews, Muslims, and other good religious people are going to follow the Antichrist, unfortunately thinking that he is Christ or the Messiah of the various religions. That's the great tragedy, I think, of the coming apocalypse.
If the end times are near, Reverend, do you believe that the Antichrist is already on this planet?
I believe that it's very possible, yes. I wouldn't say definitely. We're not to say that. No human being can know that. But I think it is possible, yes.
What is your interpretation, sir, of the number 666?
The basic interpretation is that the number 7, of course, is the number in biblical numerology, the number of perfection. So the number 666 falls short of it three times, once for each of what would otherwise be the Holy Trinity.
Mm-hmm.
So the 666 basically represents the diabolical parody of the Holy Trinity.
Is it then misconstrued as the mark of the beast?
No, because it is the mark of the beast. Going back to when the time the Book of Revelation was written,
mm-hmm.
666 was the 666 was the numerological equivalent of the name Nero Caesar when written in Hebrew. And Nero, of course, being the great persecutor of Christianity during the first century A.D., was a type of Antichrist who will be a great persecutor of all things good while portraying himself as the Messiah during the end times.
How, sir, do you believe we will know the end times are here?
One thing is to know how to identify the Antichrist when he reveals himself. For one thing is, I believe the vast majority of people will believe that he is Jesus Christ, because the word Antichrist, Antichristos, in the original Greek of the New Testament, means not only against Christ, but it also means before Christ, as in coming before Christ, and instead of Christ. And the Antichrist will appear before Christ, and I believe that those who believe in the so-called rapture theory,
mm-hmm.
a rapture doctrine, who believe that Christ is coming first, are in serious danger of ending up worshiping the Antichrist.
You have done occult investigations, and I was wondering if you could tell us your most, the case that shook you the most when it comes to demonology, and is demonology dealing with Satan directly?
Demonology is the study of the demonic realm. It goes back to the Middle Ages when the priests of the Catholic Church would study the demonic realm in order to understand which demons may be plaguing a person if they had perhaps the desire to commit murder or perverted sexual desires or various things of that sort. That's what that's the origin of the term demonology, the study of demons, basically. Usually in the sense of demonologists today use as a prelude to exorcism, if possible.
How many different demons are there?
There are, at the very least, hundreds of thousands. I think it's more likely millions, according to the New Testament, the Book of Revelation. The demons are one-third of the angels who fell with Satan when he was cast out of heaven, who followed Satan in his rebellion against God and were cast out with him.
Now, what has happened to you, or what experience have you had when dealing with demons?
Well, I've been doing this as an occult investigator since 1984. I was very young at the time. I was 15 years old. And this was during the time when Satanism, especially what they called at the time self-styled Satanism, was becoming very popular among teenagers. Mm-hmm. And I knew people at the time who were involved in such things and have seen it lead to very much the destruction of people's lives and to drug addiction and various forms of insanity, crimes, committing of various crimes, both violent crimes and otherwise, and things of that sort. And I've also experienced over the years the various supernatural manifestations of demonic possession and so forth, levitation. I've heard the people speaking in unknown languages that they didn't know. That's one of the definite signs of possession. And seen things like furniture move on its own, all of the classic things which people see in the movies and hope are just special effects, do most of them at least actually occur.
What does a demon look like?
They can appear in various forms. The frightening thing about it is, as St. Paul said in the New Testament, Satan himself can appear as an angel of light, and that's the most dangerous form. Many people who become involved with demons begin by thinking that they're actually involved with the Holy Spirit or angels or things of that sort.
Reverend Daniel Gargiulo is our special guest. Please stand by, Reverend. You and I have to take our news break at the bottom of the hour. We will be back after the news and a brief commercial set. If you'd like to give us a call, Exxon Nation, ask the Reverend any questions about occult investigations, demonology, psychic phenomenon, or exorcisms, give me a call at 1-877-528-8255. That's toll-free throughout the U.S., Canada, Alaska, and Hawaii at 1-877-528-8255. The good Reverend and I will be back on the other side of this short commercial break with the news as the X-Zone continues live and around the world right here on the Talkstar Radio Network from our studios in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada.
Hi, this is Ken Elliott. When I'm floating around the universe, I always try to tune in to Rob McConnell.
Hey, hello there, Kermit the Frog on Sesame Street. When I want to find out what's going on with UFOs or ghosts, I listen to the X-Zone with Rob McConnell.
This is Les Corrigan from Target Internet Development. You're listening to Rob McConnell on the X-Zone Radio Show.
This is John Hogue, Prophecy Scholar,
and you're listening to Rob McConnell in the X-Zone.
Welcome to the X-Zone, a place where fact is fiction and fiction is reality. Now, here's your host, Rob McConnell.
As a pumpkin.
You were a pumpkin.
As a pumpkin, a big orange pumpkin.
A big orange pumpkin. And when you, were there a lot of children out there?
Not so much.
No? Did you get a lot of candy?
Yeah, I got a lot of candy. Mommy's eating all the chocolate bars.
Well, tell Mommy that's your candy, honey.
Okay.
Tell her.
Stop eating all my chocolate bars, Mommy. That is sick.
Reverend Daniel Gargulio is our special guest, www.gargulio.com. Reverend Daniel, what is it like when a person is possessed? How can you tell if they are possessed to the point that an exorcism is actually required?
I would look for actual supernatural manifestation of some sort. As I stated before, levitation is fairly common, and the things like the shaking of the bed, the speaking in strange languages, like perhaps it's a person that's never studied Latin or Greek or something of that sort and suddenly can speak it, and things of that sort that are the classic examples of evidence of possession.
The movie The Exorcist that came out a number of years ago, how close to reality was that movie?
Actually, pretty close. William Peter Blatty actually did study a lot of the traditions of the Catholic Church involving exorcism and based it on a couple of true cases, including the one case, fairly famous case now because of its use in the movie in the 1940s, of it's actually a young boy who had an exorcism performed on him, and a lot of the incidents of The Exorcist, the book, and later the movie were based on that incident.
Now, I was wondering if you could tell me what it was like when you did your very first exorcism.
Well, as I have the... I was born with what St. Paul called the gift of the discernment of spirits. I have the specific ability to feel the presence of an evil spirit and tell if it is an evil spirit. And the thing that struck me about being in the presence of one or more evil spirits and continues to strike me about it is the incredible feeling of dread, the feeling of doom. And often I thought at first that this feeling was something they were trying to make the other people feel in order to cause fear and so forth. But later it came to me that what I'm actually experiencing and what the fear that you may feel in the presence of such creatures is the deepest part of their soul, because they know themselves that they are doomed to destruction, to eternal, literal hell in the end, and they let this out. They bring this to the people that they possess and to those around them.
Why would someone get possessed?
There are various reasons. The classic example, not dabbling in the occult without knowledge of the thing, but in things of that sort. So most often I have found the most common cause of possession is child abuse, especially the sexual abuse of a child, because the pain, the psychological pain and trauma that a child will undergo on having been abused in that way is something that the demonic spirits feed on, because demonic spirits are basically disembodied psychic vampires, and they feed on fear and on pain and suffering, and there's no greater pain than that of a child who has been horribly abused.
Is it more difficult to do an exorcism on a child than it is on an adult?
I would say there would definitely be a point to saying that, yes, because it's very important, first of all, to make sure the person undergoes no actual physical injury or anything mm-hmm. of that sort, because the demonic spirit will try to drive them to injure themselves. And in the case of an adult, of course, you can get their permission to strap them down or whatever as a mental patient, the same problem would be. But with a child, that of course can be a problem. But it is more difficult also just because the child is innocent of any wrongdoing themselves. And in the case of an adult, you could get them to repent from whatever
mm-hmm.
sin or evil that they've done that may have gotten them there, while the child is suffering because of someone else's evil. So in that case as well, it is much more difficult, yes.
What do you take with you when you go on an exorcism, and how do you prepare yourself?
The basic tools of exorcism are, of course, crucifix, religious symbols of other types. For those who aren't practicing Catholics or Christians, the Star of David, the Jewish religion, the Egyptian Ankh, the cross with the loop on the top, mm-hmm. most people have seen, was used as protection against evil even thousands of years before Christianity, an ancient Egyptian form of the cross connected to the god Osiris, and it still is effective against evil. And, of course, holy water that has been blessed by a priest or minister, classic rites of exorcism, readings from the Holy Scripture, and all things of that sort.
Are you in any danger when you perform an exorcism?
Exorcists are in danger, and in many different ways, especially psychologically speaking. The philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche, while an atheist himself, certainly not a Christian, or necessarily a believer in evil spirits, said something which I think is very apt in discussing exorcism. His famous saying, if you wrestle with monsters, you may become a monster, and when you stare into the abyss stares back into you. And that is a good explanation of what can happen during exorcism, because it is very psychologically draining, and the spirits will go to any length to try to get the exorcist to lose his temper, to doubt his faith, and most of all to feel unworthy of God's grace, or even to feel unworthy of being thought of as a decent human being. Is one of the tactics that demonic spirits will often use.
How long does the average exorcism take? Is it hours? Is it days? Is it weeks?
They've been known to take everything from a few minutes, the saying of the basic prayers, to weeks and even months. And the person is doing something that can invite the spirit back, it can be a process of years, even in some cases. It has been known to happen.
So, how do you prepare yourself for the exorcism, Reverend? Do you? I know you pray, but how do you prepare yourself physically for the challenges that you're going to be facing?
Basically, the way you would prepare yourself for any extremely draining activity is as much sleep as possible. You want to not be hungry, but not be too filled with anything either. It's basically the same thing you need basically the same thing you would for any strenuous physical activity, as well as mental activity. So sleep, as well as prayer and meditation before the exorcism begins, and basically I find breathing exercises to help try to stay as calm as possible. That's the most important thing, to not let the spirit get to you in the case of when they attempt to play with your emotions.
Tell me, has a spirit ever tried to possess you while you are exorcising a spirit or a demon from another person?
That is very common, and while I can say it hasn't really worked with me, that is a lot more common than people would think, and even some of the saints of the church have been possessed. I mean, even after they were Christians living a saintly life. I mean, demonic spirits are very proficient at finding ways in through weaknesses, psychological, mental weaknesses. They'll look for any opening if they've decided to target an individual.
Since you joined the priesthood, how many exorcisms have you done?
As far as full-scale exorcisms that have taken the actual rites, the more profound, solemn rites of exorcism, less than around 100, I would say. Though as far as lesser exorcisms, like the small rite of exorcism written by Pope Leo XIII and saying prayers for people who believe they're troubled by evil spirits, several hundred, because I get even just email requests every day for such things now that I'm online with it and all of that, what goes with that.
Where did these spirits or the demons go after they are exorcised by you?
The goal of exorcism is to send them back to hell, to perdition, to the abyss, as it is called in the New Testament. There have been other examples, a famous example in the life of Christ when he was exorcising demons, and they asked him to send them into the swine, the herd of swine that were feeding nearby, and Christ did so, and the swine immediately ran down and threw themselves over the cliff, showing us that even swine, pigs, know better than to have anything to do with demons. Basically the moral of that story.
Has Satan himself ever possessed a human, or does he leave this to the demonic realm?
The greater demons, the ones we would call devils, of which Satan is one, tend to concentrate on larger figures, political figures in history. Examples would be, of course, like Emperor Nero, Hitler, of course, more recently, perhaps Saddam Hussein, people of that sort, dictators, Stalin, perhaps Pol Pot, people of that sort, are the people who are possessed by the greater demons of the names of Satan, Lucifer, Beelzebub, and so forth.
We touched on this very briefly, Reverend, the people who dabble with the occult. Now, there are many people these days who are taking up the occult and the paranormal as a hobby. Are they putting themselves in danger?
Well, I would in no way condemn anyone who wants to study the magic or Wicca, white witchcraft, or anything of that sort. But I must warn people to be, you know, careful to study, not to just take it up as a hobby,
mm-hmm.
but to take it up as a very serious study, as you would any study on a scholarly level. And I in no way condemn people who are occultists. There are some very good people who are occultists, and I don't believe it all leads to evil. I believe that what we call magic, or even what we rather loosely call witchcraft, is not an immoral force, not a moral force, but an amoral force, which can be used for good or evil. But any sort of power can corrupt and can lead the person to use it for selfish means, which is an opening in itself for demonic influence.
Reverend Daniel Gar, we have to take a commercial break. We'll be back on the other side. And when we come back from the news at the top of the hour, Jesse Kelsey will be joining me. He is an astronumerologist. And if you'd like to give us a call and speak to the Reverend, we've got about 4 minutes left at 1-877-528-8255, and we'll be back on the other side as the X-Zone continues on TalkStar. Reverend Daniel Gargiulio is our special guest, so www.gargiulio.com. What is the most gratifying aspect of the work that you do, Reverend?
To help the children who have been abused. That's really the most important thing to me when you really come down to it. That's something that's very important to me, and I respect anyone who works in that thing, that sort of realm, whether spiritually or otherwise, because children are just something I feel very protective towards. And to help anyone who's been abused, who as a child, also adults, knowing what the psychological scarring of that can be from having worked with so many people of that sort, that to me is the most important thing.
What can our listeners do, Reverend, to combat evil and the demonic possessions and the demonic forces that are out there?
One of the most effective things is the prayer to St. Michael the Archangel, who, of course, was the archangel who cast Satan forth from heaven. And the prayer was written by Pope Leo XIII in the late 19th century. You can find it on my website, the homepage of my website. I put it there, and I recommend anyone who's interested in being part of the fight against the forces of darkness to learn that prayer and repeat it as often as they wish or feel the need to do so.
Statistically speaking, Reverend, are possession cases up?
Yes. Recently, I've seen a great heightening in them, and even the current Pope, even though the Catholic Church in recent years, unfortunately, has mostly kept silent about such things, the current Pope Benedict XVI, is being said there are some rumblings underneath of the Vatican, according to what some people have put out in the news recently, that the Vatican is going to finally begin taking possession and exorcism very seriously again within the Church.
Why did they back off in the first place?
Unfortunately, as I said, when with organized religion, I think they were just more concerned with public opinion. It seems like some crazy medieval belief, and they just didn't want people to associate them with that. And unfortunately, human nature being what it is, that became more important than doing the work that God had called them to do.
That makes no sense, because religion itself is an ancient belief.
That's true.
So how could they cast one out and cast one out and keep the other?
They just try to keep the positive things that people like, and not to bring about the negative parts of it, I suppose.
Reverend, I want to thank you very much for joining us tonight. Sir, can you let our listeners know how they can contact you?
You can contact me through the website, garguilio.com, GarguilioIO.com, and on there you'll find the link with my email address. You can write with prayer requests or any inquiries, and I'll get back to you as soon as I can.
Reverend, take care of yourself, and a Happy New Year to you and yours.
Happy New Year to you, sir.
Good night, sir. 1-877-528-8255 is toll-free throughout the U.S., Canada, Alaska, and Hawaii. My name is Rob McConnell. Now, when we come back from the news at the top of the hour at 6.5 minutes past, we are going to be joined by Jesse Kelsey. And Jesse is an astronumerologist. He's going to be joining us and taking your calls at 1-877-528-8255. The X Zone is a place where people dare to believe and dare to be heard. It's a place where fact is fiction and fiction is reality. We come to you Monday through Friday from 10 p.m. Eastern until 2 a.m. Eastern, right here on the Talkstar Radio Network. I'll be back with Miss Brandy and our next guest, Jesse Kelsey, when we return from the news, live from our studios in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, right here on Talkstar.